You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll learn about a program in Milwaukee that pairs adults with seniors to help them stay healthy and independent.
First, we're taking a look at the criminal justice system here in Wisconsin. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court banned mandatory life sentences without parole for juveniles who had committed murder. As a result of that decision, there are about 68 inmates in Wisconsin who committed murder before turning 16 who are in a gray area. They're not likely to be paroled, but they don't technically fall under the Supreme Court ruling.
Kara Lombardo joins us now. She's a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she's been following this story. Kara, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much.
Well, before we key in on these Wisconsin inmates, let's look at what the U.S. Supreme Court did. What did that decision mean?
Right. Well, in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court outlawed the life sentences without parole for juveniles. That's anybody under the age of 18. In 2016, they went back and said that decision should be retroactive, so therefore someone who had already received the life sentence without parole should now get a chance to see the parole board or have their sentences reexamined. One important thing about the ruling, though, was that it related to mandatory life sentences without parole. So that would be when it is required that if charged with this crime, you automatically get that life sentence. Here in Wisconsin, we don't even have that. So that's one aspect that doesn't apply to the 68 people we're looking at.
Right. And looking at those 68 now, they received life sentences for crimes committed as juveniles, right? But we don't have, as you say, that technical category of life, mandatory life without parole. But in effect, it sounds like they're very unlikely to be paroled.
That's right. Actually, on our list, they not only don't have mandatory life sentences, but they, many of them, all but three on the list I was looking at, will be eligible for parole or have already been eligible. But the issue is that parole here in Wisconsin has been slowing down. We've seen under Walker's administration fewer and fewer people being granted parole. So the question is, are these juveniles effectively serving life sentences without parole? And some of their lawyers are starting to ask that question.
And when at least some of these juveniles were sentenced, as I understand it, it was when a parole tended to happen more often. The odds of being paroled when you were eligible were much higher. So a court's understanding of that sentence might have assumed that they would be paroled someday. And then it changed.
That's right. One case I looked at, Deng Yang, who was 15 when his neighbor convinced him to shoot his wife for him in exchange for $25,000 and a truck was the promise. Obviously, he didn't follow through. Deng Yang, when he was sentenced, I spoke to his family. They distinctly remember getting the impression from the judge he was receiving a life sentence, but he would likely be released after 13 years, which was his first parole date. So judges were sentencing people under the expectation that most people were being paroled around a quarter of the way into their sentence. And now Deng is still obviously in prison. He's seen the parole board multiple times, but he keeps getting deferred. So he's not seeing what was expected.
Let's talk about some of the different reactions and approaches people are having. There are people who are calling for changes in juvenile justice in the United States, fewer juveniles being tried in adult courts, not having these really long-term sentences. What kind of arguments are they pointing to for people who have often committed, juveniles who have often committed fairly heinous crimes?
Yeah, these crimes are absolutely horrible, every one of them. It was difficult to read about. So that is that's obvious. The research that some of the juvenile justice advocates, the Supreme Court, and even now lawmakers of all types are pointing to is the brain research. We know now it's fairly accepted, widely accepted, that the juvenile's brain, specifically the portion that controls impulse control, the portion that's able to stop and think, what are the consequences of this action? What are the positive consequences? What are the possible negative consequences? That is still being formed all the way into your 20s. And in fact, they also know that juveniles' brains tend to diminish the negative consequences and really focus in on the positive consequences. So for example, in the case of Deng Yang, being offered that large sum of money that was almost too big to fathom, that type of thing would have been enhanced in his brain, and he would have not thought through what is he actually doing quite as much.
So the idea being that someone who commits a heinous crime at age 13, 16, that neighborhood might not turn into an adult who's likely to repeat that crime.
That's the exact idea. And the other thing we know from the brain research is that those same the same development that's still going on is also makes them more capable of rehabilitation because they're more able to bring in new information. Their brain is still developing.
Talking to Kara Lombardo, she's been writing from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about life sentences for juvenile offenders in Wisconsin. Kara, you also talked to someone with an advocacy group for families of victims of crimes. What did you hear from them?
Yes, I spoke to Jody Robinson of the National Victims of Juvenile Murderers organization. She's the president of the organization, and she was describing how painful it is. She lost her brother to a juvenile in Michigan. She was describing the painful process of legal issues that continue on for if a sentence is reexamined each time that reopens the painful healing process that they had started to do. She mentioned that knowing exactly what will happen, for example, somebody getting a life sentence and knowing that they will be eligible for parole even, but knowing when that parole date will be with certainty allows people like her to get the closure they need. She said when the Supreme Court rulings happened, that opens up old wounds for these people. Then her group has about 400 members, and she said they feel similar in that way.
Speaking of families of victims, you also wrote about one of these 68 inmates in Wisconsin who was working to try to prevent other juveniles to prevent crimes. He was contacted by the father of his victim. Can you talk through that story?
Yeah, that was quite remarkable. Adam Purcell, he was living in Milwaukee. When he was a young teenager, he got involved with a gang. He was one of a few people involved in gunfire that killed a 18-year-old member of a rival gang. Since he got to prison, he had a few hard years in prison where he wasn't acting out. He had a total reformation and began writing down techniques for parents to use to tell if their children are becoming involved with a gang or at risk of becoming involved with a gang. He wrote now a 500-page book about how to recognize the signs. He's put together an iPhone app in which the parent can kind of take a quiz. Has your child mentioned this? Has your child been in these areas of Milwaukee or across the state? He identifies and then gives the parent back a likelihood that they're at risk for becoming involved with gangs and how to prevent that. So he's done a lot of that work. He was actually featured in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article several years ago. And the father of the 18-year-old who was killed in that crossfire reached out to Adam Purcell and wrote him a letter and said, "I just want you to know, I forgive you. I support what you're doing. Keep doing it. That's really important work." Mm-hmm. And the father also wrote a letter on behalf of Adam to the parole commissioner saying, "I have no problem if you want to release him. I really want him to be able to do this good work outside of prison."
Now, the status quo for these 68 people who were convicted as juveniles here in Wisconsin, they are in prison. They may be eligible for parole now. They may be someday. Odds are they won't get it, given recent parole statistics. Is there an effort to change things in state law, in the way parole works, or is it case by case where people are going to try to take this precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court and try to apply it to this different situation?
That's a question I'm not able to answer. We really don't know. I think what we know now is we've seen many other states. I mentioned a few in my article, but many states are examining the parole process, both for juveniles and other people. And we know here in Wisconsin there has been a push in the legislature to raise the age at which someone can be convicted as an adult. So they're hoping to move 17-year-olds back to the juvenile court. The current proposal for that would not include violent crimes, but these types of law changes tend to happen in portions. So this could be the first step toward at least keeping more juveniles out of the adult system.
Kara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That's Kara Lombardo, reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She talked to us about her reporting on the legal gray area some Wisconsin youth are in after a Supreme Court ruling banned life without parole sentences for juvenile offenders.